we ready?
Ready.
Okay, and also Jazz, I heard your note, so we are actually recording this today on video.
Love that for us. Thank you.
You're welcome. I listen. You know, I take feedback. You know what that is? Come on, Jazz. Come on.
Growth.
Growth. There you go. There you go.
Oh, but look at all of us with our nails. Hey.
This one's about to pop off, and I will not be looking ratchet in these streets. No, but yes.
I'm going back to my red as soon as my appointment next week. I miss my red.
I understand that.
I miss my red, that red energy, so we're going to get red next week.
N-I-G. Anyway. Okay, so, you know, we're just going to kick off the episode, y'all, because I have the group chat part 3 Q1 wrap up. And for those of y'all in the corporate space, you understand what it means by a Q1 wrap up. We are talking about the success, but we are also talking about the learning opportunities for the past quarter. Now, to shift it over for Coffee with Yvonne perspective, a show for creatives and entrepreneurs, we're going to talk about the top stories in Q1. Now, we're going to get a little messy. Okay, we're going just a little messy because there's a lot to talk about. I've been bookmarking the things, and you know, me keeping in mind my personal brand, some things will stay in the group chat, and then some things we'll actually talk about on today. But we have to introduce our panelists. Now, they are not new to this, they are true to this, and at this point, you might as well just go ahead and add it to your resume. We have welcome back to the pod, my pudding pop, Miss Jasmine Smith. Hi.
How are you doing? I'm good. How are you?
I am Gouda like the cheese.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you. And then we have Miss Courtney Pope, aka the marketing OG, aka the creative bestie of Miss Jasmine Smith, and she is on the pod back again today too. How you doing, boo?
I'm good. I'm ready to dive in, honey. I saw the list and I was like, oh, we're going there.
So. We all have our hoop earrings in today. I love that for us. Hoop earrings. Stand up. Do we want to do your bios or shall we just jump right into it? What's the tea?
Ooh, I mean, I love hearing about the great things that we're doing. So I'm always going to advocate for a bio, but we have a lot to dive into. So I feel like we can hop right in. If the girls can listen and hopping in, they know who we are by now.
They should know who you are.
Google us.
Okay. Google is free. And LinkedIn, please check out all the accomplishments that these wonderful Black women have accomplished because the list is long and the CVS receipts are here. Okay, let's go ahead and dive into these topics. Where shall we start? Let's start with the one who's...
girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Diddy. So let's give a high level overview first. I'm so corporate at this point. I don't know where it stops and where it ends. But let's give a high level overview at this point. Diddy and them lawsuits have been shaking up the timeline since November. Despite the numerous allegations, it appears that members of the culture like Boosie, Stevie J, and Slim Thug, among others, are standing 10 toes down for Diddy, using conspiracy theories about corporations wanting to take Diddy down to justify their reasoning. Do you think we use conspiracy theories to justify supporting questionable behavior or bad behavior in the culture? Courtney, I see your face. I'm going to let you go first. Let me go ahead and put myself on mute for this one.
Sean, can I call you Sean? I'm calling you Sean because your mama called you Sean. Go ahead and log off for me, babes. You're done. I think what we are seeing right now is a sort of reckoning, if you will, perhaps even a boomerang effect from the Me Too movement. I think when the Me Too movement first hit, right, we were seeing a lot of emphasis and focus simply on Hollywood. Producers, directors, you know, people who run studio houses, all the things. They were getting all the smoke. And it seemed like hip hop and that community kind of just floated under the radar. And then we started seeing tricklings of it first with, you know, Russell Simmons. Then from that Russell Simmons conversation, it brought up the questionable behavior of Dr. Dre. And we were starting to get kind of like a bit of like a trickle effect of people kind of like being called out on their things that have been whispered about amongst the community for years. Then you have Miss Cassie kick in the goddamn door and the floodgates are open. And it became a free-for-all for us to now have a larger conversation, not just about Sean, because I'm not calling him Diddy, Sean, and his questionable behavior, but the other people that are also in his circle that not only were either in the room and participating in this questionable behavior, but also enabling his behavior or looking the other way. And I think we've gotten to this space now as a society and as a people where we can no longer look away. And I am thoroughly annoyed at the fact that we as a people, and it's not just a Hollywood thing and people of power, this trickles down into the community even when it comes to familial relations. We have this tendency of wanting to keep things hush hush, wanting to sweep things under the rug, wanting to, you know, sort of present this united front as if we don't have our issues and things like that. And I think conspiracy theorists and conspiracy theories is one way in which we try to, not even we, let's be clear, Black men, uncles, that are not with the times, that have also done their own questionable behavior, that come from a generation of where women don't necessarily use their voices or feel like they have voices, and they feel threatened in some way that their sense of normalcy is now going to be no longer, of then trying to make it like a Black community thing, a the man thing, a they're trying to take a Black man down, we have to be united front. I'm not gonna be a united front about no mess. Okay. And I have to say allegedly, because I think that regardless of my opinion, everybody deserves their due time in court to, you know, plead their case, plead their innocence, and, you know, the chips will fall where they fall. However, comma, the consistency of these allegations are reverberating loudly. Okay. And you can only try to keep people on mute, but for so long. And I think The not only are the allegations reverberating, the silence of the people who was calling you brother, sister, and all of that, who have yet to say anything or come to your aid, is even louder. And I think that's enough to drown out into this ridiculous kind of like conspiracy conversations that we're seeing. Stop it. Just because you've reached a certain stature, just because you are a figurehead within this community, does not mean that you are beyond any sort of reproach. And I think we have to cut that out immediately. Two things can be true. It can be that somebody is a pioneer, has done great work, has done great things in their respective fields, and they're still a shitty person and have done questionable things. Those two things can still exist. And I think we need to get over the idea that when somebody has done something, that is supposed to negate all this other mess.
Mm-hmm. So Jazz, aka Pudding Pop, you know, Courtney, she's already laid out the dinner table and at this point has already started serving dessert. What do you have to contribute to this? Like, what are your thoughts about the whole Diddy, Sean John, his mama named Clay, I'ma call him Clay allegations that are still happening in the culture and the excuses that we are still making for this kind of behavior?
Yeah. No, Courtney said, hey, I have a table prepared for all of you to sit at and eat. So no crumbs. I completely agree. I do agree. I think just in a lot of spaces and places, there is a reckoning. I think there is a lot of light being shed in dark spaces. And I think there is going to just be more that comes to the surface. You can only hide things in the dark for so long. When Courtney was talking, the first thing that came in my mind, and I'm so glad I didn't unmute myself, was like the scene from Barbershop when Such an Entertainment, he said, OJ did it. And I just was like, yeah, that's really what it's giving. I think we all know what we know. We believe what we want to believe. And I think the conspiracy theories echoes how people choose to stand with someone, even though they know it's wrong. Like the idea, mm-hmm. like you said, Courtney, around, you know, people just want to tear a Black man down. He set his own altar. And he's going to fall. Mm-hmm. And so I think the one thing that you said that I really agree with is that the silence, how you choose to respond to certain situations speaks so much louder whether it's by silence or it's by speaking out. Like, it goes, and people notice. People take notice of who stands and supports what and who and when. The timing of things matter. Like, all of that is into consideration as far as our community. And so I think there's going to be much more. And the fact that this man, I mean, just in general, once Cassie unearthed that document, the fact that this man ran away, to have the Department of Homeland Security, to have government officials raid your home and you skip out, you dip out, and your kids are still there, like, that is a very intentional type of raid. That people just aren't getting, like, those things take time to muster up. So it's just not by happenstance that this was methodical. This was planned. This was, like, so I think we're going to see a lot more of it. I think the conspiracy theories are crap. And I think a lot of times some, not all, but some Black men like to leverage the "we're all being attacked" narrative when it can probably serve them. And I think that they forget that a lot of us are so much smarter than they realize. And a lot of us don't say a lot of things. We observe a lot of things. And 2 + 2 = 4. The math will math. And so, yeah, I agree with everything Courtney said. There's a day, there's a reckoning happening in culture across different arenas and spheres of influence that, like, enough is enough. So yeah.
Yeah. I think you touched on something too that I think people are glossing over, is like that level of organization that happened, that raid in itself, something that somebody had kept saying is like, they don't come knocking at your door, kicking down your door and everything like that, unless they have like found something that they feel is like worthwhile of like looking into. This wasn't necessarily like a warrant where they're trying to like fish for something. And from my understanding, from what I've heard, is that this investigation had been like going on for months prior.
And that's the thing, Courtney and Jasmine, I'm glad you brought that up. Homeland Security, for the DMV girlies who know, who live in this area, the government just don't pull up for nothing. Okay. Unless they have something that they are investigating about you. So a lot of us in the DMV, when we saw that report about Homeland Security, we like, bro, you messed up. You did something.
Oh, for sure.
Homeland Security don't deliver flowers to nobody, okay?
And, I mean, we're talking about three-letter, top-tier three-letter organizations, right? So this wasn't just some like, okay, y'all, okay, so next week, schedule the raid. Like, that's what I'm saying. That level of intentionality, that level of methodic planning, and like you've built up enough receipts and enough case to do this. So the fact that people are even so trying to justify and keep this narrative, I'm like, y'all are literally intentionally choosing to have a blind eye when all
of when have we not had a blind eye as a culture? When have we not have a blind eye? Because, you know, and I don't want us to stay too long on this because we have other topics we have to cover. But when we think about Cosby, we have turned a blind eye to that because we all love The Cosby Show and A Different World. When we think about people like R. Kelly, they're still stepping to the name of love at a lot of family cookouts, despite the number of things that have come up and have been prosecuted against him about the things that he has done for a number of years. We are turning a blind eye to Trey Songz. Things have come up about Trey Songz, okay? Kiki Palmer even said it herself. She alluded to it, I think, when she was on, what was she on, the Wendy Williams show when that was still on? But it was either the Breakfast Club or Wendy show, one of them two platforms. But we have always made excuses in the culture because we want to, more importantly, always protect Black men or feel like we're under attack. Sometimes we just have really bad behavior and it's not enough money or power that can excuse it, but we use money and power to excuse bad behavior and to sweep things under the rug. At that level, they always want to make an excuse that someone was trying to buy something or up the culture and then here come the feds. No, you were just a trash ass individual. And it's always been proven. If we look back at making the ban, y'all, the way he made them walk for that cheesecake should have told us something as children when we were children watching the show. Yeah. But anyway, thinking through with Diddy, Sean John, whoever he is right now, This is not going to go away.
Do you remember when he was like, call me love?
No, that was the TV too. And I don't want to dive too much into it, but I feel like that whole change in the name of love thing was a strategy move, because Diddy don't do nothing without a purpose behind it or a marketing tool for himself.
I remember, this is how you know I'm churchy. I was like, first of all, the only person that is love is God. I don't got time to be calling you love. I would scream. I was like, love? Diddy? Really? Diddy? You? Sean Combs, Puffy Daddy, like, you had too many personas. Please, sir, figure it out. Yeah.
The only thing he should be showing love to is the courts at this point, because he about to get prosecuted. Okay, so allegedly.
And I'm going to sip my tea on this one.
Thinking about our next topic, we're all familiar with Good Times, right?
Of course.
Courtney, take a deep breath. So recently, and I believe the new series dropped yesterday on Netflix, recently there has been a reboot of Good Times. Now, JJ, Evans, and all of them have moved on as a whole new generation, and the animated series received mixed reactions across social media when the trailer dropped. The Root reported on this, but the series follows a new generation of the Evans family as they thrive and survive in a housing project in Chicago. The star-studded voice cast includes J.B. Smoove, Reggie Evans, Yvette Nicole Brown, Jay Farrell, and our own baby, Marseille Martin, our internet baby. And the baby, a drug-dealing baby, is another character who is voiced by Gerald. I'm sorry, I don't have the name up here. My apologies. But anyway, there's a drug dealing baby who's also part of the cast. Please note that Stephen Curry and Steph McFarlane are known as EPs on the show. The question is, team, are TV shows like Good Times, the reboot, a bad reflection of Black culture, or are respectability politics still holding us back from full creative freedom? Jazz, I'll let you have this one first.
I don't like reboots, and I'm just really irritated with, like, I just don't, like, okay, let me try to get my words. I really don't like when people, like, let's leave a really good thing be a really good thing. I think shows like Good Times, shows, like, there are certain shows that are just nostalgic and good, and the original series still works. You know, we can catch all the original episodes. I think, like, you can still watch. I just have such a love-hate and mainly hate relationship with reboots. I just do not think, honestly, this might sound mean, but I think a lot of times when reboots happen, I feel like a part of me feels like it's lazy. Like, I don't see, especially to take the same thing. I could understand taking, like, the basis around, okay, it's a family in low income housing. But to have the same exact show, the only difference that is animated, like, I just, y'all, keep the good as it was. Like, I just have such a disdain for reboots. And oftentimes, reboots are not good. They're just not. You know why? Because you could have kept the original as the original. Like,
no. Wait, I do have a caveat for that. There was one reboot that I admit is really good, is Bel Air.
I watched first season of Bel-Air. I'll be honest, I haven't watched the second season yet, and mainly because I was like, oh, okay. I watch a lot of TV and I consume a lot of entertainment. So to me, I'm like, oh, okay, it's nice. I can always go back to it. I do think the reboot was great. But that even in that reboot, the dynamics felt different. Like, the energy felt different. I just, something about reboots just bother me. So to your question, because I entered off in a tangent, and I apologize. I just think...
Tangents are fine.
I just think they're not a bad reflection of Black culture, because the reality is there are people who live in low-income housing. There are people who these stories are true for some people, and I think every story deserves to be shared. I think what bothers me is when we don't have enough of a balance to offset these reboots. So, for example, there was a show, and I'm blanking on the name, but I think it only got one season. It was on Peacock, and it was like four friends that it was like three guy friends and a girl, and they were just like living in. It was a really good show, and I'll try to Google.
Are you talking about Grand Crew?
Yes, Grand Crew.
I love Grand Crew.
A great show, and I think it's positive. It was, they talked about certain things and topics.
It was our Seinfeld. It was a show about nothing. And it was just a vibe.
It was vibes. Yeah. And they touched on certain topics that felt good to the culture. And it only got one season. And I think a lot of times, two seasons. Okay. So I think a lot of times we overlook just like really good TV as corny. And then we reboot certain stuff that doesn't need to be rebooted. And I'm like, y'all are missing out on really good entertainment, like really good shows out here. But because culturally it's quote unquote corny, it gets overlooked. And so, I don't think it's a bad, bad reflection of culture. I just think it's, we just choose to lean on certain narratives and we can share more. And
Here's the question about that though. Cause if you notice, two things, the Good Times reboot has a drug dealing baby on it. That is something that does bother me. But another thing is too, if we think about shows that have been successful in the past 5-ish years, shows like Power, BMF, the Power Universe in general is highlighting and promoting like, you know, low income drug culture, hustle culture, this and the other. Those seem to be the shows. Oh, and Snowfall is another one. Those seem to be the shows that make it when it comes to us as a collective unit and what's adapted in the greater universe of media and TV. To your point, Jazz, Grand Crew, phenomenal show. Only lasted 2 seasons, I believe. And that was a show that was just a reflection of just us being us, but it didn't make it because of low ratings, though people did support it. Is it us who's helping to amplify these messages and stereotypes by normalizing that these are our stories, by not pushing more for shows that show us in a better light? Because Power's been going on forever and people still tune in.
Yeah,
Grand Crew had 2 seasons, but people weren't tuned in. So is it us who wants to normalize or is allowing this space?
I think partly us, but you also have to realize too that a lot of people who are producing these shows, I think it's a little bit of a lot of nuance. I think a lot of it is just awareness. Like I think as a culture we don't realize that there are a lot of good quality TV happening off of these mainstream networks, like Peacock and ABC and NBC Family. Like there are a lot of good shows and a lot of people are still very much adopting their own network, trying to build their own platforms for us, by us type of energy. So like you have the All Black, which had really good TV, like TV shows. You had things like, you know, Issa Rae's media company is producing other shows on HBO or Max. So I think a lot of it's just an awareness issue. I do think part of it is we enable and perpetuate these similar narratives all the time. So people who are in these boardrooms who don't look like us will back and fund shows that we quote unquote support because there's no one else saying that's not our full story. So I think a lot of it is awareness. I think a lot of it could be a matter of we're catering to what's already worked and what's already been done. So we don't step out with innovative ideas and scripts because people might find it corny. People might not take it seriously. You might get low ratings. And that show wasn't promoted well. Like speaking of Grand Crew, like that show wasn't promoted well. So had it been under maybe like Hooray Media and it got on Max, it might've had a fighting chance. I just think there's a lot of nuance to it. And I do think it is partly us. We continue to push this narrative forward. And I think a lot of it is awareness around where people go for good TV. But at the same time, I think we're starting to break out of that. I've seen creators on TikTok, for example, just do TV and film reviews. Black women, Black people are being like, great show, not a great show. Like, so I think the piece of the creator economy and working with content creators to help get that awareness out is something that's starting to happen more fluidly, which could hopefully break out that monotonous storyline that like, we've seen it all, we've done it all. Y'all been telling that story since the 90s, you know what I mean? But just wanted to share that too.
You've made a lot of great points. Now, Courtney, your face has been sending me this entire time because I know there are things swirling around in your head. So do you think the Good Times reboot is a bad reflection of the culture, or do you think we are too deep into respectability politics when it comes to how we're being portrayed?
You know, y'all could have kept that and gave me my season 2 of Lovecraft. Okay, I'm still standing 10 toes down on Lovecraft and season 2 and the way y'all just cut her down like that when we was really given black sci-fi fantasy, great storytelling, great costuming, great references, cultural things, all of the things, like definitely giving me like the sci-fi effect on like what we see in Atlanta. Y'all could have kept that. And here's my, where I really take issue is, it kind of hurts my soul to know that Steph Curry is a part of this project. It really does. It does not surprise me that Seth MacFarlane is on something like this, because this seems to be right up his alley of what he thinks is funny. So I'm not surprised that that's, when he views our community, that's what he thinks is funny at all. It just tells me a little bit more about him and his typical kind of like fratty, bro-y, raunchy comedy stint, body odor stint. Yeah, I said it. But I think, here's the thing. I don't think it's a respectability politics sort of thing, because Good Times, the original, right, told a story that was very familiar to us as a people of this low-income family. I don't care what family you look across. We all have aunties, cousins, uncles, or whatever who come from that background. We might even come from that background ourselves. But what made it work is that the characters themselves were people that you saw yourself in, you saw some of your family members in, and in spite of their low income status, there was still a level of humility, class, pride in these characters. You know what I'm saying? Like, it talked about real issues and real things in a palpable way. You fall in love with these characters, and you saw a people that, in spite of their circumstances, were still thriving in their own way. So to now cut to a new generation of the Evans, and it seems like you've thrown almost every caricature of blackness that you could think of into a pot, mixed it together, no seasoning, because let's be clear, Seth MacFarlane on this project. And then are like, and here you go, and served it on the platter. It's a little tone deaf, especially in 2024, just because it's like, where is the human element that made Good Times work? It's like, in spite of their circumstances, these people still went to work. These people still loved each other. They, you know, built a community, had their own community for themselves, helped each other when they could. Like, that's the stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like reboots, if not done well, take a lot away from the originals, dilute what made it work, or sometimes just like, it's very clear you like completely missed the point, you know? And I think too of like, the fact that there was nobody in the room, that when they sat down at this first table read and there's a drug dealing baby, didn't say like, walk me through this. What's his purpose? What is this supposed to represent? What is he, you know, like, what are we trying to portray? What are we trying to say about this community with this drug dealing baby? And the fact that I'm even saying drug dealing baby in a sentence,
I cut myself off. That's the thing, Courtney. That's the part that bothered me the most. Like, I was watching the trailer. I was a little open-minded. I was like, you know what? It's a lot of stereotypes in here, but maybe they're going to bring it around somewhere. Then I saw the drug dealing baby. And then they had the drug dealing baby getting pulled up by, I think, DaBaby, Wayne, like baby, the whatever, a bunch of different babies. We're already seen as criminals in a lot of different spaces, right? And through images that are being perpetuated about us, why are we reflecting this in an animated series? And to your point, Good Times, though I did not like it when I was younger, because I was like, why they always showing us as broke? When I watched it through an adult lens, I saw a working class family, and everyone could relate to that. The father was present. He was always working. He loved his wife down. JJ, he wasn't that focused, but he was a creative through and through and had this talent for art. You know, then you had Thelma. Then you had, like, you know, the little radical one, I think Michael. Like, there was a story that kept the family together, and there was still always hope that they would make it to the next day. This ain't give me no hope. This gave me 5 to 10 in terms of what the baby mom is serving in a prison sentence, you know.
Oh, wait, can I also just say, you know, not to get too crazy with it, because, you know, it can go Dr. Umar quick. Ma'am. But what message are we saying when we are now criminalizing our Black children?
I mean, it's giving the prison pipeline. That's what it's giving. It's giving very much the school. I think when I was looking at the article you sent over, just seeing people's reviews and thoughts about it on Black Twitter, I think that's the thing. And I think that's the problem I have with reboots. Like, when you decide to reboot a classic, a Black cultural classic, that the way it was just cheapened in the trailer and just watered down, it was almost like you just wanted to make, like, Baby's Kids and Proud Family, but small, good time and call it a day. And it's like, that is so disrespectful to the legacy of the original series. Just as much.
Because the people still here. The people from the original series are still here. Why ain't nobody bringing them into the room?
Like, the way I'm 10 toes down for Black cultural classics, like, I still rewatch a lot of good TV, like, a lot of TV from that era. And I'm just like, that's the problem. Like you said, it was tone deaf. And if you're going to reboot and try to reimagine classics, do it, come correct. Like, don't embarrass us. Like, even, like, for example, even with Insecure was so well done. And she paid tribute to Living Single. She paid tribute to Girlfriends. Like, we can liken it to those classic TV shows for us in the culture, because she had a very unique spin on it. It was culturally relevant for when the show was aired. And you still have the nostalgia of Living Single. You still have the nostalgia of, like, it fit for the time. And this show does not make any sense. And I'm just like, why? And if it's animated, you think I'm watching that with my kids? Like, this is not a family-friendly show. This is an anime. Like, the animation part threw me off too, but I just had to name that before we move on.
Can I ask you this?
Yes, and then we have to move on to our next topic, because, you know, we got to keep time in mind. But go ahead, Courtney.
Can I ask you this? Are we going to watch at least one episode to see if maybe, just maybe, because there is also something, hold on, because there is something also to be said around the tactics of Black rage marketing. Yes.
Okay, Big Bo. Okay, marketing tactic. Go ahead. Yeah, the floor.
Is there something to be said around the fact that they know that these characters are jarring? So that's generating conversation and buzz for them, love it or hate it. And is there an opportunity, maybe, because I just can't fathom Steph, like, signing off on mess. So is there an opportunity here where it's like, okay, people are raging, everything like that, season drops, get into the season, and it's not exactly what we thought it was going to be? Kind of like in the same way of Reverse, where people got super excited about Mythical Black Negroes or whatever, thought it was going to be something really dope. And then it was
Courtney, you can watch it and report back. I'm not going to watch it.
That part.
But you can watch it and report back to the group. Let us know in the group chat.
Let us know in the group chat what your thoughts were. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I will not be using my streaming and my upgraded Netflix package, because I was forced to watch this show. All right. I'm gonna give y'all a choice of what we talk about next. All right. Next topic can be about Beyonce and the limit of Black creativity. Or
now, why are you going?
I said we're gonna get a little messy. Or the rebranding of DEI.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Chaos.
I'm gonna go Beyonce, only because everything about that DEI conversation irritated me, and I was like, you know what? As someone that works in, I can't have this, is too close to my job. I'm stressed, and I was like, no, thank you.
Chaos.
I was like, I'm gonna go with Beyonce.
Courtney.
I'm gonna go be simply off of you know, Virgo gang and standing with my mother. So
mother forever. All right, so we are knocking out the topic of DEI. If you want to learn more about that, just hit up your latest social media platform, because there have been a lot of things said around it. However, this also is culturally adjacent to DEI as well, in the way that we're going to be talking about Queen Bee. So, as you know, and first of all, let me tell the listeners, before y'all try to come for me, I have been 10 toes down for Black country for quite a while. Okay? Don't say I jumped on anyone's bandwagon. I have a whole Rootin' Tootin' Trap playlist that I love that I continually add Black country artists to. So I was very excited for this album. Okay. As you know, Queen Bee recently dropped Cowboy Carter. And before we even heard the first two singles, there were opinions and think pieces about why Beyoncé should stay in her lane. Despite being from Texas and having deep roots in the South, you know, my daddy Alabama, my mom Louisiana, you mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Kind of Bama.
Okay, sorry. Let me be professional. She has not... Courtney, please!
Sorry,
we have not received a warm welcome from the country community. However, artists like Miley Cyrus, who is featured on the album, Justin Timberlake, and Post Malone, who is also featured on the album and Sound Sober, have been able to explore traditionally Black genres to critical acclaim.
Ooh, you know what? I'm so glad you...
Let me finish the question.
I'm going to let you cook.
Come on.
Go ahead.
Why is there a resistance to welcome Black artists into spaces outside of what is commercially acceptable, despite being the trailblazers for that genre? Courtney, I'll let you have it first.
First of all, you can't welcome us back into anything when the root of it is Black, baby. Black. Any genre of American music that, if you want to get down to the nitty gritty of it, is rooted in Blackness, period. And there is a long-standing history and receipts, CVS link to be exact, of us seeing the whitewashing of Black voices across all of these genres. And the fact of the matter is, I'm so glad that you brought it up, the way that it is so easy for our white counterparts to kind of just dip their pinky toe into the Black pool, and they want to be cool, and they want to put on the chain, and they want to put in the grills, and now they want to twerk, and now they want Metro Boomin on the beat, and all of those things. And then when they're done with it and they're ready to return back to their roots, air quotes, now they want to be in the wilderness with their guitar and their little shag carpet jacket on, and, you know, when my mama this and my daddy that.
Or be a man in the woods, and that album flopped anyway.
Be a man in the woods.
And I love JT, but that album was terrible. It was terrible.
Terrible. I just hate...
You ain't missed nothing.
I hate the fact that no matter how much we have shown throughout history, our art, our literature, just living, that Blackness is not a monolith. We are not afforded those opportunities to be able to fully express ourselves, expand in other areas. You know, it's still very much, it has to be square, it has to be palpable, it has to be something that they can easily understand. And the scope in which they can easily understand us is narrow as hell. And that all the other folks are able to grow, expand, express, experiment. And they can just come and go as they please, in and out of our communities, in and out of our music, in and out of our spaces, is wild to me. Especially when you think about the fact that, like I said in the beginning, Blackness is all throughout this country. It's all throughout our literature, our music, our language, our way of dress, what is cool now, and how they conveniently now want to kind of rebrand that as Gen Z language. There's no denying it. And the fact that Beyoncé has always been intentional and very clear about her roots, If you look throughout the entire catalog of her work, and this is not me trying to stand because I enjoy Beyonce. Some would even say that I'm a Beyonce fan, not a stand, because y'all crazy. Let's be clear. There's levels to this. I am a fan. What I appreciate the most is her consistency. And if there's one thing that she has always been consistent about, is two things. One, her Black Southern roots and respect to country and everything like that. Two, she has always been a student of music, all kinds of music. As you go throughout her entire catalog, she is sampling from every inch of the music field, whether that's country, whether that's rock. She would throw in an aria if she feels like it. So now we're getting into opera. She is a student of music, and that shows. And I think it's almost comical that you all don't even think, because you're so much like, if it's white, it's right, to even do the math when the math is not mathing. So Beyonce can't be in music, but Keith Urban, who is from Australia, can be in country music.
You don't even go here.
You don't even go here, but you can be in country music. So for real. Now, I can't, now, hold on. I can't throw Miss Shania in there because apparently there is a thriving country community within Canada.
Okay, I'll let you have that. Okay.
We're going to let her have that. But Keith, in that raggedy ass bob, in them slide highlights.
Not the raggedy bob.
But Courtney, you're saying something that I think people forget. Beyonce is a student of her craft. And for those of us who have been following her since the Destiny's Child days, she has always been studying. She studied opera when she learned how to train her voice. She studied Miss Tina Turner, Michael Prince, James Brown, all the greats. And that influence is interweaved through her music. Also, period, this is not the first time that she has utilized country in her music. If you really pay attention, Daddy Lessons had country in it. If you really pay attention, some of her ballads that have more of that folky feel have a bit of country blues intertwined in it. Country is an evolution of Black cultural genres that came over from slave ships. Okay, because we brought the banjo with us and we rebuilt it from memory, how to do the banjo to entertain the slave masters on the plantation. And that country folk bluesy sound came from the cotton fields as a way for us to tell our stories because we were not allowed to read.
Let's be clear. Country music came from people of color, period. Because I also want to give respect to people where country, as much as they don't want to acknowledge it, country has a lot of roots in Mexican music as well. The roots are there,
but it only became unseasoned when it was culturally appropriate and we were pushed out of those genres. And also, if you notice in the album, she pays homage to the Chitlin' Circuit, those areas that we were only allowed to play our music because we were banned from places and spaces because we were not allowed to walk into that front door, which she noted in one of the lyrics of one of the tracks on Cowboy Carter. But the point that I'm making is, and you said it beautifully too, Court, and then Jasmine, I will let you have the floor. I think we are also at fault for allowing for artists outside of the culture to dip and dab into our space and giving them the tools that they need to further elevate themselves through our talents, through our voices, through our style and everything. Like, we have a habit of just being happy to be in the room and happy that someone wants us to be a part of their project, but we're not protecting our culture either, which is why everyone can claim our culture at this point, which is why Gen Z is claiming their language is their language, which is rooted in AAVE. We also have to take part in that in inviting everyone to the cookout. At this point, the cookout invitations are closed. Okay, they are closed because you need to fill out a complete survey, and we also need to know where you were on January 6th at this point, because some of y'all are cosplaying as being part of the culture when in reality, you only want to be part of the culture when it's convenient for you. Beyonce is not trying to cosplay a culture. It is her culture. And until you recognize and realize that Black people and people of color are part of these spaces that you so claim to know so much about, you will never allow us in there. Because you're holding on to your own inherent racism and your bias. But Jazz, go ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I've said enough. I'm going to go on mute.
No, I mean, literally, y'all took the words out of my mouth, so I don't have much to say. I don't take it. I'm not surprised. I think at the end of the day, I'm not surprised. I think when certain places and spaces have been whitewashed to the point where they, because here's what happens. Things get whitewashed, gentrified, if you will. And then they have this false sense of control. And now they, because they think that they own the space, they own the narrative, they own the things. Why would I, if I were them, I wouldn't think twice about this. Like, yeah, this is my genre. This is my thing, because all I know is that this is my space and place, because I've, my ancestors, my forefathers, whoever, have continuously pushed people of color out. So I'm not surprised at the reaction to the album. I think what's going to turn people up is if this next album is a rock album. They about to be going jazz? Through this. If this thing is a rock album.
If we get a rock album, front row, mosh pit energy. I'm telling you.
I do think that to your point about how part of it is our fault, I think it tells back to what Courtney said about blackness is not a monolith. There are plenty of people, myself included, that enjoy country music. And I remember growing up, it's not something I ever like talked about, but I don't think I was so enthusiastic to be like, oh, I love country music, because it was a white thing. So culturally, I think there are a lot of people who enjoy certain genres or certain things that would typically be perceived in modern day like whiteness, but really it comes from the people of color who have now had to hide that part of their identity because there is some level of shame and embarrassment in cosplay as like, oh, you're a white girl, you an Oreo, things that we've all heard. Straight says straight to our faces. So now that when Beyonce does it, it almost, I'm not gonna lie, it kind of feels like, well, why when she does it, it's approved. But you had people like Tanner Adele, you had all these other artists that, thankfully, I'm glad that she does know how to pull people in and build people up.
Exactly.
I really appreciate that about Beyonce. But you have to ask yourself, when Beyonce does it, it's okay. It's Beyonce Queen B. But if another artist produces something like that, it's such a half and half of reactions, and I think that culturally is a problem. Like a lot of people, like I remember listening to Fifi Dobson.
I knew I loved you for a reason.
I was into Paramore. I was listening to like Evanescence. I was listening to, you know, before we go down the rabbit hole, my point is you see videos from TikTokers and creators who are like white songs without white people done that like go hard in the black community, right? But at the same time, I think we're just now being comfortable with people like, oh, I actually love country music, or I actually love, because I think a lot of people feel like Beyonce gave them that power to take back. But I have to ask myself, you know, why is it that it all falls on, it ends and begins with her? Like, people don't necessarily jump out at that unless she's moving the culture. And I think that's a lot of responsibility for someone to bear. I think we put a lot of pressure on her to be the sole spokesperson for all black things. And that's not fair to her either. So, yes, as much as things are being whitewashed, I think a lot of us in our own cultural spaces and how we grew up and how we were raised and we're in our environments have had to hide parts of our identity to say, oh, I do like country music, or I do enjoy this, or I do enjoy that, because all of a sudden it's considered white when in reality it's not even rooted in whiteness. So,
you brought up a point too. So it's also a flip, right? You know, there's gatekeeping by those in white spaces who think that we should stay in our lane. And there's also a flip on the other side with our own culture telling us what lane we need to stay in because of their own personal comfort, right? Like rap music all day long. You could go hard in the paint for rap. I know some people who love rap music, but I've caught them vibing out to certain songs and they try to hide it or be like, oh yeah, that one song is cool. It's like, it's okay to like other things, right? Because like, you know, for what you brought up, Jazz, I love Fifi Dobson. I loved her in high school. Like, you know, Stupid Little Love Song, one of my favorites, Don't Let It Go to Your Head. I have the CDs still at my mama's house. Evanescence, same thing. But I had to hide those parts of myself because I was called Oreo in school. I was being called white girl because I wasn't up on all the hip hop trends, but I liked other things. So I do think Beyonce is carrying the weight of the culture of saying this is what is acceptable. These are the people you should have been following in the first place. But it's also our own weight of releasing us from the idea of how we limit our own version of what Black is, you know? Oh,
for sure. We don't want our Black heart revoked.
Right.
Can I also say this too? I think to Jasmine's point, yes, there is a lot of weight put on Beyonce to carry and be the voice of Blackness. However, I will also say that as much as there's like us on the flip side, people within the community who are kind of like gatekeeping, like what is and isn't Blackness or whatever, dare I also say that there is some responsibility to be shared around Black media outlets as well that are filtering what we're consuming and their lack of representation. I'm not even, I'm talking about Essence as well.
Oh, we're doing that today? Oh, we're doing that. Okay, go ahead, Courtney. We're doing that.
I'm talking about our Essences as well. I'm talking about our Ebonies and everything like that, because I guarantee you, prior to a co-sign from Beyonce or whatever, they weren't posting about Tanner. And Tanner's song, Buckle Buddy, which is a has been going viral, multiple times for months now, since back in 2023. So, or let's also talk about the fact we have made, or let's also talk about the fact that you have these major opportunities on different shows on BET where you have thousands and thousands of people now tuning in, right? Like your BET Awards and everything like that. And you fade out the up and coming artists, or their performances aren't even aired. So what is the point then? If they're only being heard by the people in that room, and you have an opportunity to literally turn the mic on and amplify their voices now to the thousands and the millions of people who are streaming and watching. Let's also talk about that practice. So I would also say that like it is a community thing for us too. I think it's a generational thing as well, because I remember growing up and I loved My Chemical Romance, and I had my mom come into my room and sit me down and ask me if I was okay, because she was concerned about my music. So I think it's a communal thing. I think it's a generational thing. I think it's a media thing as well. And my hope is like, look, it is what it is. We now have identified the thing. We now can openly say Blackness is not a monolith. I think it is up to us, and not just Beyonce, up to us as consumers to apply pressure to these media outlets, to the people that we're tuning into, to the, you know, the streaming services that we're paying money to, and saying, this is what we want to see. And now, because everybody on LinkedIn, it's time to pull up in people's inboxes as well.
Not an inbox pull up.
Not on LinkedIn. Hey, not on LinkedIn. A LinkedIn raid. Not LinkedIn
drive-by. Right. I'm just saying, because now that all these marketers and things like that also want to be influencers now.
Ooh, okay,
Courtney.
Now I can just DM
next topic.
Now I can just DM and be like, hey, I noticed on your programming that you don't do.
What's the next question?
Oh, too much?
I mean, but did she lie, though?
But did she lie?
But did I lie, though? Did I lie, though? They love to put in their bio, elevating the culture.
Oh, my.
Okay, oh, what was your next question?
But you know what? To close that up with a big bow before we move on to our final topic, there is a point about all these creative conferences that we have now in our spaces, and there could easily be bringing in maybe like a Black music executive to talk about amplifying talent outside of the bubbles that we are used to in, like, you know, the culture. Like, you know, how are they helping up and coming talent? How can we find, you know, people like this who we can support? How can we amplify their voices? Like, maybe talking about those kind of strategies around that, maybe even sliding some of these DMs, like, you know, the up and coming Tanner Adeles or the Britney Spencers, and offering our services to help them build out their brand spaces on these algorithms. Like, to your point, Courtney, there is an opportunity for us as marketers and creatives to step in to further elevate the culture and not just leave it on Queen Bee's back to do all the work. All right. Our last topic. Artificial intelligence. Do we need to take a deep breath first? Because
I'm fine. I'm well.
Okay. All right. Well. Courtney, you good? All right.
I'm good, honey. I'm fine. You are fired up, nigga.
All right. So our last topic is about AI or artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And talking about, is AI a threat to creativity? So, give background. The advancement of AI has recently called into question the ethical use and practice of the technology. More specifically, how AI will impact the creative and marketing space. The tool is now being integrated into platforms such as Grammarly, Canva, even writing full-on marketing plans or digitally generating models for campaigns. In music, AI-generated songs using an artist's voice have started popping up across social media. Morning Brew recently shared a post about artists fighting back against the technology. The post reads, in an open letter, over 200 high-profile artists, Katy Perry, Stevie Wonder, the estates of Frank Sinatra and Bob Marley, among others, have demanded an end to AI's growing impingement in the music industry. We haven't seen technological innovation like this since the early days of social media. The question is, do you think AI will have a negative impact on creatives and the ownership of work? Jasmine?
How did I know you were going to give this to me first?
Because you are a content creator and you are creating original content your platforms.
I think it is, anything... AI is great. I use AI in my full-time life. I use AI to simplify my life. I use AI when I am stuck in having I can't think coherently around content creation ideas. So I do leverage AI as far as five random things that I could probably pull from. I think AI is meant to be and should be used as a support, not the main thing. It should not be used as a place for all ideas. You need to vet your AI content. You need to vet the ideas that you pull from. I can search on AI five ways or five fashion tips for mid-sized curvy women. And out of the results, I then pick what I can make how I can tailor those ideas to fit me in an authentic way. So I think AI has a lot of power to do good. It definitely simplifies the workflow, especially as a marketer, as someone that leverages social media in and out of my full-time career. It helps just simplify the work stream 100%. On the other end, I think anything that's used in the wrong hands can have terrible impact, right? So there have been, even recently, AOC saw images of her that were lewd and incredibly graphic that AI did. So whoever did those pictures used AI to artificially imitate those images. The thing about people using certain voices and AI has the power to do really, really good, but it also has the power to do really, really bad in the hands of whoever's managing that thing, right? I just want to name, we're heading into a presidential election. There's a lot of AI that's about to happen, a lot of misinformation that's about to happen, so you have to combat the way people are leveraging AI for evil in a lot of ways. You have to combat that with more authenticity, more real in-person engagement, being able to be the person that comes on the camera and be like, hey, y'all, such and such and such, or, okay, so we're going to talk about this. That's why I think it's so important to leverage when you can be in front of the camera, be in front of the camera. When you can talk, show who you are. So that way when people do see AI that doesn't sound, act, or think like you, that's how people can know the markers of, okay, that didn't sound like Jasmine. That's not how Jasmine talks. The only way people in your audience will be able to distinguish the difference is if they know you. And if they don't know you, it's so easy to get caught up in AI. I think AI is really, really wonderful. I see it. I've worked in it. I've worked with it. I love what it can do as far as help me navigate content, help me navigate ideas, help me just have a space to brain dump or source information. But I never want it to be the main thing. And it shouldn't be the main thing. It should always be just as another tool in your toolbox to create valuable, meaningful content. Another tool in your toolbox for whatever you find yourself doing, whether it's in marketing or whatever role you have. But to solely rest in the power of AI is very dangerous. And I think if you don't know your own limitations and how you engage with these platforms, like only you need to, I think you need to have a level of self-awareness to say, okay, I have the power to manipulate. I have the power to really upend some stuff and shake the table in a bad way. So there has to be limits and boundaries. I also know that I can shake the table up in a great way. So AI in the right hands can do a world of good, and AI in the wrong hands can do a world of evil. It's not the tool itself, it's the person that's managing it. Same way we feel about Instagram and the algorithms. It's not the tool itself. It's the people who are managing it. It's the people who are not navigating these spaces and places well to the benefit of their audience. So I think people should just keep that in mind, that these tools are tools, not meant to be the main source of anything, but meant to help supplement how your workflow goes and how you create content from an authentic space and place. But if you don't have your own authenticity in lock, you unearth all the things that come with that, good or bad. So, yeah.
I'm still that. There you go. Okay, that mute button be getting me sometimes. So before I go to Courtney, I think you brought up something that is going to be important in this conversation in the future, right? We had social media, and I'm aging myself at this point. Facebook was very new when I was a freshman in college. You had to be invited to Facebook to be part of it, right? Then by the time I graduated from college in 2009, we had Facebook and then Twitter. And when I was fresh out of school, a couple years later, Instagram came on the scene. During that time period, I call the wild, wild west of social media. People didn't really know how to really handle these platforms, what these platforms should really be used for, right? And people started popping up using them to promote their business. Now we have more of a regulation in a way for social media, where you have strategists like us who know how to use these tools appropriately to amplify the voices of the clients that we work with or our partners. What I think is going to happen with AI on the good side, I think this is now going to spark a whole new level or prong in our industry. There's going to be a conversion between, and if there's anyone in school listening right now, please take notes, because I'm dropping tea that y'all need to pay attention to. There's going to be a conversion in our industry between marketing and ethics and law.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think a whole new career spectrum is going to come out of this. Again, pay attention, take notes, kids. These kids who are in school right now should consider, who are studying marketing, also consider getting their Juris Doctor or law degree, because there's going to come a time where AI, the ethical part, is going to come into play in this gray area that we are now discovering with using people's likenesses, their voices, etc. And there's going to need to be a quality control in terms of content.
Yeah.
For people to understand before mm-hmm. they post, but someone who understands the law and the limitations that AI can have, or the limitation that the creator can have in terms of protecting their likeness. So I do think that there's going to be a new space carved out for that. On the flip side, what I am worried about is the way we use social media to spread misinformation. Now that we have this digital tool that can mimic people's voices, that can mimic, you know, different likenesses and everything else, there's going to be even more misinformation spread out there, to the point we don't know what's the truth and we don't know what's not the truth anymore. And it's going to be less informed mm-hmm. people who think they're making informed decisions based on being manipulated by this technology.
I agree. I think before you pass it to Courtney, I agree. I think the reality is, and this is something that expands outside of AI. The reality is that most people are leveraging their information from social media, and they're not looking to read full articles in the news. They're not looking to watch full videos when they see a clip. So our attention spans over the last 5 to 7 years has significantly diminished, which is so unfortunate. So our attention span is less. And because people are watching 90-second clips, or they're reading and skimming articles, we're already at a disadvantage because we're not well informed like we used to be. Like, well informed as far as watching the news on the TV, on the TV stations, and reading full articles or reading the daily newspaper. Like, are a lot of us, mainly Gen Z and some of the later millennials, are not reading. And reading is crucial. Like, reading is fundamental. So without us being, we're already less informed because we're taking up less attention spans. And then you couple that with misinformation and you couple that with AI intelligence. That, I think, like you mentioned, is a really incredibly dangerous spot. Like, you, we as people have to force ourselves to be better about being well informed across all things, whether it's political things or health and read, like, whatever the thing is for you, you have to be well informed. You have to read the full article. You have to watch the full video. Like, context is incredibly important. And so when you are just scrolling through and you're finding your information, your source from, oh, this TikTok video or such and such, that gives AI free range. Because if you're well informed and you're reading articles and information from across spectrums and across thought, people's thoughts, and just getting a sense of not just what feeds me and what I like, but listening to the other person's perspective that might not agree with you, like, you got to be well informed in that way. I think what happened is social media is catering to what you already you're interested in, right? Like, so if I'm showing up and I'm watching our makeup reels, my feeds will only show me a lot of makeup reels. But to diversify your thought, you have to diversify how you're sourcing it. And I think that's just really important as a content creator, as someone that works in marketing, as someone that is trying to be as well informed as I possibly can. You have to diversify your thought. And in order to do that, you have to expand outside of what just feeds you and feels good to you. Like, that's why I love when we get together, because we all have differing thoughts and opinions. While we relatively agree on a lot of stuff, I might not agree with something Courtney says, but it helps shape how I'm informed. And I think people need to talk more and listen more and get informed better across all places, whether it's social media or online or offline. So I'll wrap up and give that to Courtney now. So.
All right, Courtney, let's wrap it up with a big bow. What you got, sis?
Okay, so I have three main points that I want to make, and I won't be before you long. So the first thing is this. Here's what I feel about AI. All right. I feel like AI is to good marketers what seasoning is to an already banging sauce, okay? It literally is that. It's all it is doing is adding just a little extra oomph to a sauce that's already top tier. And so what I think is also said to be true about AI is to lazy marketers what ragu is to somebody who can't cook. So with that being said, I think what we're going to start seeing is what I think we're going to start seeing is a clear delineation between the real marketers who know how to think, who know how to be creative, who know how to, you know, pull threads through and do complete storytelling, versus the lazy marketers who are already kind of just floating by, right? Okay. Very lazy, who are using AI as the main course when it's quite literally just like the roll in the meal. Or whose toolbox was already empty, like, you know, Jasmine's toolbox analogy there. And, you know, I think we're going to start seeing people get caught up, because we are already, just shifting gears to my second point, we're already seeing that now, right, with people using AI when they are being lazy, and now they're being caught up, you know, whether that's plagiarism, whether that's, you know, thoughts that are clearly not their own, etc. You're seeing that now, right, with the kids in college and everything like that, and their articles or their assignments being flagged and everything like that. So I love the fact that we're seeing this, like, renaissance, if you will, of, like, music, retro, Y2K. When are we going to get the renaissance of reading? Because renaissance of reading needs to happen. It needs to happen immediately because it's fundamental. And I think we're going to start seeing that now more than ever as AI continues to grow, because of the fact that you have people out here who are solely, like, to your point, solely getting their information from online. You also have people who are solely in their current roles and everything like that because of AI as well. We had a situation not too long ago. I'm not going to name no names, but there was a situation not too long ago with a beauty writer who had their position ripped from them, honey, because they plagiarized another Black woman's work and got called out on it. I would not be surprised if I had to do a little bit of digging, is that when that's when AI caught up to their behind and they were using AI to write those articles, because you have larger digital media companies and everything that who want you to pump out 5 and 6 articles a day. The demand is insane for that. And then these articles, if we really want to get down to this, because I am a journalism major, are literally less than 350 words. That is a blurb, babe, not an article. I digress. Third point, I think Yvonne hit it right on the head to all of our marketing majors that are in school right now. Buckle up, okay? I need you to get in them books. I need you to head over to that law department and get your coin, because there's 1000% going to be a correlation between AI and ethics, AI, ethics, and media, AI, ethics, media, and marketing. Because I don't even think a lot of marketing or even, dare I say, journalism programs are even teaching things, something as basic as law anymore in these programs. And you need to know these things before you end up caught up. And now you're liable for some shit. And now you done slandered somebody. And now you're getting sued and you ain't got 2 coins to rub together, let alone a pot to piss in. So I am hopeful for the future of AI, for those people who know how to utilize it already. And let's be clear, those people are real marketers, real creatives, real people who are doing the real work. I am fearful for AI, for the people, and let's be clear about those people, that is lazy marketers, ain't shit writers, and people who ain't picked up a book in I don't know how long. I'm very fearful for the future for those people, okay? And let's also like get granular so that you don't get too comfortable and think that you're so far removed. Because the people who are using AI for bad are also coming for you, babes. You may not be, you know, SpongeBob getting your name and your likeness misused, but please believe the Atlanta scammers are out here on that keyboard trying to figure out how they're going to use AI, and they're going to take a snippet of your voice. And now you're going to trying to be wondering why your credit score is shot. And that's because somebody has taken a snippet of your voice and is now opening credit cards in your name. And you're going to be like, that's not me. And they'll be like, oh, we have your verbal confirmation right here. Let me play the clip. Boop. So please don't think that you are so far removed from this AI situation that certain things won't trickle down and come to you. Because just like Jasmine said, as much good as happening in the world with AI and technology, just with anything, because humans, we like to get into shit, okay? So you got the people who are doing it for the good, and then you also got the little messy ones over here in the dark corner in their room because their mama didn't love them or somebody told them they was ugly, who are doing things for the bad. So just be careful, folks.
That is so specific. Why was that so specific? Not their mama didn't love them. I mean, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Oh, my God. Now you're going to be better help on the line. Oh, no.
Get them. Call them. Talk. Okay? If you like a sponsor, because you got people out here doing mess in the world because they need a hug.
Oh, the whole temp's gonna be mad about this one.
They auntie told them they won't go on amount to nothing. They said, I'm gonna show her, and now they're a hacker. Yes. Okay, like
then this girl said, Atlanta scammers, Atlanta scam. I was, yo, being on mute, I was screaming.
Same. Ooh, wow. So,
what a time. So, Jesus.
Yes. Oh, Jesus. Those are our topics. And I forgot to mention too, y'all, for those who are listening to the pod, we are testing video component for this episode of the podcast. So if you want to catch all the reactions.
Yeah. Catch me in 4K. And if you don't agree with some, pull up.
I will do my due diligence to upload this on my YouTube channel so you can watch the episode. But that is all our topics for today, y'all. And once again, I just enjoyed this group chat bonus episode because it is so unfiltered and it's so wonderful to continue to have y'all as commentators on my podcast that has hit over 15,000 downloads.
Period.
And just to let you guys know too, while we wrap up this episode, this is our second to last episode of the season. I do have one more bonus episode coming up that even Courtney and Jasmine have no idea what I'm planning for this one.
Wait, are we on it?
No.
Huh? Oh. Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute.
So the next bonus episode and the last episode of the season for Coffee with Yvonne will be an episode around our favorite fashion event of the year.
Come on.
You know how you like to tussle.
Okay. And it'll also be in person at a studio.
Excuse me?
Okay, can we put the phone? Because you guys want to talk.
We're going to wrap up the episode. If you would like to learn more about me and my business, go ahead and check out pinkdollhousemarketing.com, or you can follow my business page on Instagram. You can slide into my DMs. That's cool. At pinkdollhousemarketing to find out more about me and my day-to-day life, things I'm listening to, how I'm vibing, and how I'm living. Go ahead and follow me on IG at pinkdollstyle, or follow me on TikTok, aka the Clock app, at Pinky Creates. While I get my friends chatting more about what I have coming up off this recording, I can't wait to chat with you soon for our last episode of the season. Okay, bye!
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 Coffee with Yvonne is produced and edited by Yvonne Pearson. Coffee with Yvonne is created by Pink Dollhouse Marketing. You can catch the latest episodes by subscribing to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.